Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Economics Report and American Mosaic, coming up after As It Is.
Hello and welcome back to another As It Is program. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. We are here every day to help you learn and improve your American English. At the same time, we tell you about interesting things that are happening around the world and beyond. Today, we begin with information about satellites that are helping us learn what is under the oceans that cover much of our planet. Then we will hear how South Korea is dealing with e-waste, the parts of all those electronic devices that are old and no longer needed. So, if you're ready, let's get started with part one. We know more about the surface of the planet Mars than we know about what is at the bottom of Earth's oceans. Until recently, scientists had mapped only about 20% of the seafloor. But our knowledge of the deep seas is changing because of information from satellites. Christopher Cruz tells us more.
The new map is two times as detailed as the map made 20 years ago. David Sandwell is a geophysics professor at the Scripps Institution of Oceanography at the University of California. He and other scientists worked on the mapping project. He says they turned to space to look deeper into the ocean. He spoke to VOA on Skype.
The way we're doing that is to use a satellite altimeter, a radar, to map the topography of the ocean surface. Now, that seems sort of strange that you'd map the topography of the ocean surface when you really want to get at the seafloor. But the ocean surface topography has these bumps and dips due to gravitational effects that mimic what's on the seafloor.
The scientists collected and studied information from two satellites. Some of the data came from the European Space Agency's Cryo-2 satellite. It was placed in Earth's orbit to watch sea ice. The other satellite is the American Space Agency's JASON-1. It is studying the surface of the oceans. Scientists combined the satellite data with images gathered by sonar equipment on ships. Sonar works by sending sound waves through the water. When the sound waves hit an object, its presence is confirmed.
That enables us to look at smaller scale features and also features that are buried by sediments in the ocean basins.
The new map shows the sea floor as it has never been seen before. It shows thousands of underwater mountains and places where continents pulled apart. It shows where earthquakes were active many years ago. They all are buried deep underneath the ocean floor. In one place, three mountain ridges join at the same area. Huge tectonic plates can be seen clearly there.
It's called the Indian Ocean Triple Junction. It's one of my favorite spots in the ocean because it really displays the theoretical aspects of plate tectonics perfectly. We have three plates, the African plate and the Indo-Australian plate and the Antarctic plate, all connected at this one point in the center of the Indian Ocean.
David Sandwell says the map is a powerful tool for fisheries, those interested in protecting the environment, and for oil exploration.
Petroleum exploration industry is interested in how to reconnect the continents, bring them back together tectonically so you can map a continental margin, say Africa, and use that to establish where the similar basins would be on the other continental margin in South America.
If scientists know that information, they may be able to find oil fields. The new data also will help scientists improve their estimates of ocean depths. This information can help ships travel safely and improve military operations and scientific projects worldwide. Mr. Sandwell thinks scientists will make many more discoveries as they examine the new map and the information it provides. The work is described in the journal Science. I'm Christopher Cruz.
You are listening to VOA, the Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington. South Korea is dealing with increasing amounts of waste from electronic devices. These useless or unwanted parts are often called e-waste. Tons of old computers, telephones, and other devices are often taken to landfills and buried under the ground. The old products may leak toxic or poisonous chemicals. Now, some local governments in South Korea are launching special e-waste recycling programs. We learn more from Jonathan Evans.
The city of Seoul throws out about 10 tons of e-waste each year. About 20% of that goes to the Seoul Resource Center, also known as the SR Center. There, electronic devices are taken apart so that valuable metals like gold or copper can be extracted and reused. South Korean officials say metal extraction is a $3.8 billion industry. Jiung Gung is the chief executive officer of the SR Center. He says reusing electronic parts is not only about earning profits. He says the goal is to protect the environment. He says, our planet has a limited amount of natural resources. Our company contributes to a sustainable society by conserving these materials. Jiung Gun says about 90% of what is brought to the center will be used on other products. The increase of e-waste is not only a concern in South Korea. The United Nations says millions of tons of e-waste end up in developing countries. Toxic materials like lead and mercury can create a severe health risk to the local population. The Seoul City government partnered with the SR Center to collect e-waste in 2009. Lee Tae-hung lives in the South Korean capital. He says recycling is also about protecting personal information from attack. He says, if devices like phones are not recycled, then they could illegally end up in other countries like China or in Southeast Asia, and personal data could be stolen. But some environmental groups say not enough is being done to limit the amount of electronics sent to landfills. South Koreans keep buying more and more electronic gadgets. Some experts estimate that only 21% of the country's total e-waste gets properly recycled. Lee Joo-hong is with the Green Consumers Network. He says the average South Korean buys a new mobile phone every 18 months. He says companies offer special deals to buy new products. He says people change their phones so quickly, partially because companies offer big subsidies to buy new products. And Korean consumers do not want to feel left out by not having the latest model. Jiung Gung agrees with Lee Joo-hong. He says that consumer behavior is a big reason why old phones continue to appear at the recycling center. But he says he is doing his part to reduce that. He says, I have had this same phone for 10 years. It is what I can do to help conserve our natural resources. He says that more South Korean cities need to start their own recycling programs to keep up with the increasing amount of e-waste. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Thank you for being with us today. Goodbye for now.
The Economics Report is next, followed by American Mosaic. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Economics Report. The United States has expressed concerns about China's plan to create a new development bank for Asia. U.S. officials say they have questions about the new bank's system of governance. But some experts say opposition to the new organization may not be a good idea. China and 20 other countries launched the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank last month. But some nations, including the United States, wonder whether the bank meets international models for governance and openness. U.S. State Department official Jen Psaki says openness would be important for such an organization. She added that the United States is concerned about the unclear nature of the bank. Many critics see it as a possible competitor to existing institutions like the Asian Development Bank. Some observers say the U.S. opposition to the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank is a mistake. Richard Cronin directs the Southeast Asia program at the Henry L. Stimson Center in Washington, D.C.
Well, I think the safeguards and accountability issues are certainly valid issues. But the other thing is the reality. It's happening. And so the United States can express concerns, but it's not very, very good international politics to take a stance against the bank. I mean, it's going to happen.
The United States is not the only nation to have reservations about the new development bank. Australian Prime Minister Tony Abbott recently said his government would like to join. But first, he said, it needs the bank to have the kind of transparency found in organizations such as the World Bank. South Korea has said more consideration is needed on the bank's governance. Richard Cronin also says geopolitical considerations are the biggest reason why the United States and some of its allies have not joined the bank. The U.S. and its traditional allies have heavily influenced the international banking system for many years. They have funded and worked through institutions such as the World Bank and the Asia Development Bank. For a long time, China and other developing economies have said they have little influence at Western-led development banks. Some observers say the United States should consider joining the new bank instead of ignoring it. Kenneth Lieberthal works at the Brookings Institution in Washington. He formerly served as a special advisor to the president during the administration of Bill Clinton. Mr. Lieberthal believes that if the United States does not get involved, it risks appearing unwilling to take steps to improve the area. And that's the VOA Learning English Economics Report. For more of our English learning programs, go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Mario.
Welcome to American Mosaic from VOA Learning English. I'm Katie Weaver. Today on the program, it's news about women in music. We also tell you about an increasingly popular way to get around. But first, we hear about a very costly apple.
The Apple One changed the world and defined the world as we live today.
That is Christian Overland. He is vice president of the Henry Ford Museum in Dearborn, Michigan. Last month, museum officials purchased an Apple One computer at a public auction in New York. They offered to pay $905,000 for the device, which is one of the first 50 built. And it is still working. The auction house that sold the computer believed it would sell for one-third to one-half of what the museum paid for it. In May of last year, an Apple One sold for $671,000 in Germany. Patricia Meradian is the president of the Henry Ford Museum. In a statement, she compared the Apple One to the Model T car. The Model T was the first car that many Americans could buy. Ms. Meradian said the computer put technology directly into the hands of the people, completely altering the way we work and live. In 1976, Steve Wozniak and his high school friend Steve Jobs offered to sell 50 Apple One computers to a California store for $500 each. The store sold each one for about $667. The two young men built the 50 computers in 30 days at Mr. Jobs' boyhood home. When people connected the motherboard to a monitor and a keyboard, they had the first personal computer. Mr. Wozniak and Mr. Jobs later created Apple Computer. It is now one of the most valuable companies in the world. Christian Overland says he told Steve Wozniak about the museum's purchase. He adds that Mr. Wozniak answered, "That's pretty cool."
Someday in the future, we're looking forward to having Mr. Wozniak come back and visit the Apple One. And since it's an operating one, let's see how he turns it on and works with it, because that's one of the reasons why we acquired this one, too. It's one of the 15 in the world left that actually operate.
The Henry Ford Museum says only 64 of the 200 Apple One computers built are known to exist. Officials are now working to bring the computer to the museum so visitors can see history. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Bicycle, bicycle.
Have you ever wanted to go somewhere but didn't have a way to get there? Now, Marcia James tells us how to work around that problem.
People can rent many different things today. Cars, apartments, party dresses, even surfboards to ride the waves. People handle these rentals between and among themselves. They do not need to involve any company. This system is called the sharing economy. It adds up to $26 billion in business each year. It is easy to do because of the internet, online payments, and social media. One group, Relay Rides, helps owners earn money from their cars. Anas Kasawat made more than $1,000 this month.
I've always thought about why couldn't I rent my own car? And it was difficult to find the right insurance and stuff, and nobody would do it. So Relay Rides was the perfect choice at the end.
Still, people worry about security and safety. For example, an international ride-sharing service called Uber has had some criticism involving accidents and theft. Car owners and renters both feel safer when they learn about Relay Ride's million-dollar insurance policy. The company also offers many kinds of vehicles that other companies don't have. Relay Ride's CEO Andre Haddad says Relay Rides is 35% less expensive than traditional rental companies in major cities. And he also says that is not the only reason that people like it.
I think a lot of people are sensitive to their footprint, their societal footprint, their environmental footprint. And when you think about all the cars that are out there that could be better utilized and will have less need for more cars, that's also a big motivation for a lot of our users in listing out their car on Relay Rides.
Darren Swanson rents out his bicycles on Spinlister. He says he cares about making connections with other people in his community.
I just like the idea of sharing my things. I have 3 or 4 bikes, and I don't use them all at the same time. So I thought it was a good way to meet some people and share what I have.
For Spinlister's Andrew Beatty, this kind of rental helps people who like the same things to meet.
And I really see that everywhere. We're in 66 countries now. I could go to Bangladesh and feel the same way meeting someone who loves biking as much as I do.
One time, Swanson's bicycle was not returned on time. He was happy with Spinlister's response.
They were so good about it. They gave me a credit, and they were very helpful, like immediate responses. Part of that may be the size. They're still pretty small, I believe, and that you get a lot more personal attention with that.
An independent opinion study ordered by Spinlister reports that only 4% of Americans are using the sharing services.
That's not a critical mass at all. I think at the end of the day, the companies that will be here in 10 years in the sharing economy space are going to be the companies that focus on customer service and making sure that everyone on both sides is as happy as possible.
For now, it is easy for people to share their bicycles and cars in New York. They do not have to spend very much money, but in the future, the services may become more costly and more difficult to use. I'm Marcia James.
It is all about women on today's music piece. They made some interesting news this week. But there is also some news you might have expected.
Nice to meet you, where you been? I could show you incredible things. Magic, madness, heaven, sin. Saw you there and I thought, oh my God, look at that face. You look like my next mistake. Love's a game, wanna play.
We start with the not so surprising news. Taylor Swift is on top of Billboard magazine's top 200 albums list for a second week. The singer-songwriter's new CD, 1989, has sold almost 1.7 million copies since its release October 27th. Also this week, Forbes magazine named Swift the second highest-earning woman in music. Guess who was number one on the yearly grouping? Queen Bee, of course.
Mama taught me good home training. My daddy taught me how to love my haters. My sister told me I should speak my mind. My man made me feel so fine.
Forbes says Beyonce Knowles made $115 million between June of 2013 and June of 2014. That also put her at number one on Forbes' list of richest celebrities. Another music megastar, Madonna, celebrates an anniversary this week. Her extremely successful 1984 album, Like a Virgin, turned 30 on Thursday. The album's song and linked video, Material Girl, was such a major hit that the press often calls Madonna herself the Material Girl. On Monday, Legacy Records released the first ever album of live performances from Whitney Houston. The music star died in 2012 at 48 years old. The legendary producer and Houston's friend, Clive Davis, produced the collection. It includes a CD and a DVD. Davis spoke about the new album during an appearance on the American television program, The Today Show. He said, "The collection shows that she was the greatest singer of her generation." I'm Katie Weaver. Do you have a question about American life, people, or places? Send an email to learningenglish@voanews.com or write to us at Learning English, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest, Washington, D.C., USA. The zip code is 20237. We might answer your question in a future show. You can also visit our website at learningenglish.voanews.com for more of our materials. We have audio and video programs. We also have quizzes and other activities to help you test your American English skills. Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for American Mosaic from VOA Learning English.